Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, here on BBS Radio. We're here with special guest Donna from Philly Ghost Hunters to tell a few stories and discuss a few things that she's ran across in her many years of investigation and doing ghost tours. Welcome, Donna. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you, Chris?
Oh, can't complain. And I suppose if we do, the listeners won't want to listen. So I guess tell us a little bit about what you do, what got you started in the paranormal, and we'll kind of run from there.
Well, my group is very small and pretty much work all in the Philadelphia area and the surrounding area. And my goal is mostly about evidence. I focus on communication, and I really like to give it back to the community because I believe in a community of learners. I'm really here for the exploration and the learning. So I do investigations. I'm mostly drawn to things with historical significance, myths, local legends. I find a point of interest. I do a little research. And then I go investigate and I see if it's really something that I think there's a lot of spirit activity and I would go back and pursue. My work, consists mostly of collecting evidence, exploration, and really just giving it back for people to learn from it and for my own learning.
Well, it makes perfect sense. I mean, that's a key that most people don't pay attention to in the paranormal, I suppose you could say, especially early on, is a lot of the work that we do when we're out there. Well, yeah, it's enjoyable, and yes, you get to share it from time to time, but it's all about giving back to the community and educating people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that is really where I feel it's most important. We're people. We're all going to go to the same place, and if we can get some of this information, I think we can really learn from it. I kind of come from a bottom-up approach, sort of like bottom-up processing, which is kind of a theory in psychology, but it's data-driven. Essentially, it would be the evidence. And from that point, you know, what do you perceive and what can you make of it? How can you apply logic to it? Is it intelligent communication? You know, what do you think is there? And I think that's really where the learning is. And I think that that's kind of glossed over a lot, which is a shame.
It is a lot of times. I mean, when you've been in investigation for a while or you've had a chance to spend time with investigators that are truly a part of the paranormal for a while, a lot of them spend time with it. I mean, you got to do the logical deductions. You got to be able to try to figure out what the solutions are. You got to apply a lot of the things that people have done in the past. And I think that's something that a lot of young people diving in that watch television a lot of times, they tend to forget that process. They just kind of go out there and say, ooh, I've got a ghost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For me, it's really about spirit communication. I'm not sure that every energy that I've communicated with has been a ghost. Some may be energies, beings. I think most have been in this life, but I can't really be sure that all have. There's a lot of theories, and I think they're interesting to talk about. I personally don't do a lot of the drama or, you know, the video kind of thing. Uh-huh. And I think filmmaking is great. It's just not my forte. And so I really just focus on, you know, what I see, what I find, what I can capture. Mostly in the form of EVP and spirit box.
Well, an EVP is a fascinating, fascinating thing. I spent 9 years in audio and EVP working with a lot of people, and I got to tell you, you catch some things you just simply can't explain.
Oh, gosh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I have the thermometers and, you know, EMF and all that. But really, the things that I use are dowsing rods. So that's very basic, very straightforward. Uh-huh. And I have the DVR going the entire time. And then I do a spirit box session. I also do spirit boards, but, you know, they can be a little inconvenient in some locations. And also, they have gotten some really bad press lately, so people sometimes get a little scary, you know, they get a little frightened, they don't like them. So, you know, I really use the dowsing rods, in my opinion, and a lot of people would disagree. I think that pendulum, dowsing rods, spirit boards are really all the same thing. It's just one, each one is a step up and a tool that allows you a little bit more in terms of options for communication.
Sure. No, I would perfectly agree. And sometimes, I guess a personal standpoint, being able to spend time with a lot of investigators throughout the years, I like to use a lot of the terms on I'm not a big one on spirit boards myself, but it's not because I'm afraid of them. It's just that a lot of people don't understand that they go two ways. With communication, anything you do when you attempt to communicate can work with the right intent. You know, they also can go the opposite way and they can be really fooling, so I just really don't spend a lot of time with them. But dowsing rods and a lot of the older tools, you know, you go back to the basics, they work just as well, if not better sometimes, than some of the modern stuff people keep popping out every 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, spirit boards, actually, a lot of people don't realize this. They only think Ouija. They don't realize that they go back to ancient times. Ancient Greeks used their own version of spirit boards. Pythagoras felt that his inspiration really came from spirit boards, or so it's written and the story's told. So people don't realize. American Indians use them. Mm-hmm. And I approach everything, and I believe that it really is where you're oriented and what your intention is. And that's about 99% of the communication that you're going to get on the other end.
Well, that's exactly what it is a lot of times. And like you're saying, it's forgotten, I guess, in the community today. Intention is a key thing when you're actually out there in the field and you're trying to contact anything. If your intention and expectation is that you're going to contact something that's negative, you might very well do that.
Right.
And a lot of people say, well, I didn't intentionally do that. Well, if you're going in with preconceived notion right off the bat that this is going to contact something negative in the back of your head, whether you really knew it or not, you still did it, if that makes sense.
Exactly. I stay very positive, and 99% of my communications are positive. So, and that surprises people. That's how I work. And I think it's unfortunate that sometimes the darker side sort of gets a lot more attention. And that's unfortunate.
Especially since it's such a small percentage when you actually look at the total contact and paranormal community. You know, I know entertainment is entertainment, and everybody likes to have that thrill of entertainment, but I was just having that discussion with a young gentleman last week, and several actually a couple of weeks before, about the fact that, you know, 99% of what you contact out there is not the negative and the evil and the bad and so forth. In fact, there's a lot of positive things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So, you know, my goal is really to experience it, explore it, and give it back to the community. And, I recently did kind of an event investigation And it went really well. It was about 20 people, I guess, who actually went for the actual ghost hunt. And, you know, I caught some great EVPs. And one of the best things that I look for in evidence, and I've had it occur a number of times, and it always amazes me. Well, all the evidence amazes me. I mean, a lot of times you get things you don't expect. But I really value the captures where I can layer evidence. For example, ask a question on the dowsing rod, get an answer. And at that time, I get an EVP that is consistent with the answer on the dowsing rod. And it generally provides a detail or expands on it. And that, to me, is just, you know, it stops me in my tracks. Like, wow. I'm sorry?
Oh, no, you're fine. Keep going. The show's all about you, and I perfectly agree with that. Collaborating evidence when you're out in a investigative field is very, very important. A lot of people take one piece of evidence, one photograph, or one thing and say, here, well, it gets torn apart a lot of times when it's shared because we need a whole picture. If you got a picture,
absolutely,
you got a response,
absolutely,
from a dowsing rod, you got an EVP, tell us everything. How am I supposed to know whether it's real or not unless you share all the, you know, the evidence that you have and tell me a little bit more?
Right, right. And, I mean, I just think that just stands out. It's layered, and it really presents a picture. So it was about 45 minutes, I guess, with an interview with the dowsing rods. And, well, there was about a 45-minute question and answer. And then we went and did the ghost hunt, which was in a cemetery. And this was a little unusual. I spoke to, I think, the same man, essentially, for the entire length of the interview. And so that was a long duration of time, about 45 minutes for that interview. And he, I guess I got about 9 EVPs, and 7 were really clear. And one, you know, I asked him, were you married? And, you know, I was taking questions from the group as well. And actually, another person may have said, ask if he's married. Are you married? And he said, yes. Can you tell us your wife's name? Suzanne. You know, and to me, that's just like, wow. Because it's so timely. I really got a lot of EVPs there. I'm going to do a presentation with it. And then afterwards, we finished up with a spirit box session, which probably went about 20 minutes. And even that was amazing. So for many of the people there, it was like their first paranormal experience, and they were blown away by it. They were just like, wow. And this, incidentally, is the first time this ever happened. I started asking around about it, like, wow, have you ever experienced this? It was a family plot, and it was kind of almost the equivalent of an open mausoleum. And you approached the front of it, and on the spirit box, a man's voice came and said, step in. It was like, wow. So we went in, and it was standing in front of a large stone. He said, touch the stone. And we touched the stone, you know. And someone said, the stones do send out energy, and, you know, you kind of transfer energy, and it's a good thing. It was the first time that ever occurred. And I was just blown away by it. And great thing is, I caught it on CBR. So.
Well, minerals and stones and rocks do carry their own presence. There's several famous areas. One of them, actually, outside of Menominee, Wisconsin. I spent about 7.5 months studying with the university up there for a little period in time, called the Devil's Punch Bowl, and it does carry some unique effects that you just simply don't see anywhere else. And it's amazing how you can pick up on those effects. I've seen it affect electronics. I've seen unique things in that particular area that you just simply can't explain.
Yeah. Well, this area, this was actually it was unusual. It was Power Capital Management. It's an investment company. They happened upon my website, and they do a bourbon club. The owner, Tim Powers, he does a bourbon club. So they asked me, would I come and speak at it? They like to have a guest speaker. And I said, sure. And they do it at a restaurant. They reserve a room and so on. And then we went out to the nearby cemetery. But the area itself is very historic. It's just outside of Philadelphia, Lafayette Hill. And so it had significance in the Revolutionary War. General Lafayette, he actually stayed there and was stationed in that area. There are a few Patriot soldiers buried in that particular cemetery. And also underground, there are underground tunnels, which years later, African Americans used to escape slavery. So the area in itself has a lot, going for it, really, in terms of spirit activity. And I found it to be quite active. I would say that. And it's going to be good when you turn the spirit box on, and it's like all you can hear is chatter. It's analogous to walking into a room full of people who are just chatting at a party. And you kind of have to go with it, and you go with it, and eventually, somebody's going to come in and say, "Oh, hello, let's talk." So it was really amazing, and it's so great when you're with people. And I generally don't do events. I mean, I keep it very small. One person is with me most often, sometimes two people, but it really is great when you get to see people have that experience and say, "Wow." Wow. So I'm thinking about maybe doing some more of them in the future. It went well, and I said, "Well, okay, maybe I have to give that a rethink."
So, the whole area that you live in is very historic. It's got hundreds of legends really around the area with buildings and the history of the Underground Railroad, the history of the Civil War. There's just a lot of amazing places. What would you say is perhaps one of the most unique places that stand out to you?
Oh, gosh. Philadelphia is literally full of them, and the surrounding area. I mean, the entire area was first American Indians, and then the colonists. I like to find the smaller places, the off-the-road places that people don't tend to go to. But the one investigation that I'm getting ready for really is Washington Square Park. And I know that's going to be fantastic. It is a beautiful park in the old city, Society Hill. And, you look at its peaceful tranquility, the flowers, the cobblestones, and you think, wow, how quaint and nice. And really, it's a mass grave. American Indians, during times of war, plagues, people, when the death toll would be so high that they had so many bodies that they had just dumped them. I mean, and it's known to be haunted. So I really want to go and check some of that out. I think that is that's really what I'm looking to. Beyond that, I mean, it's just, the list goes on. I recently did an investigation at a small Quaker cemetery that dates back to like the 1600s. The results were incredible. And I believe honed in on John Bartram. He was a colonial botanist. And I said, I'm just going to go for it and see if I can ask to speak to someone. And he was known, he was sort of like not only a botanist, but maybe one of the first pharmacists. He would use plants and herbs and tinctures to help people in his community, people who couldn't afford medical care. And I just went ahead and said, how did you do that? What did you do? What was one of the major things that you used? And I got this answer, gold leaf, choo-choo-choo. That, again, was the EVP that was given to the answer to that question. And, you know, I got it on tape, so it's like, wow, great. And, you know, I had no idea what gold leaf was, and I went back and looked, and sure enough, it was a strain of something like cannabis, almost, grown during colonial times. And it was used for everything from insect repellents to, you know, I guess easing pain, helping with illness. And, of course, what would be the delivery method? Well, one of the things they probably did was chew it. You know, put it in their mouth, allow it to be absorbed, you know, through that first step of digestion.
As a matter of fact, it was, according to history, on the plant itself. It was used as a derivative for nausea and pain, as well as fever, believe it or not. Oh. And one of the ways they would do that is you'd ball it up, and you'd liquid it down just a slight bit, and then you'd put it in the back of your mouth and chew it almost like you would chewing tobacco.
There you go.
Yep. So, yeah. So that's actually quite interesting. I'm a history buff, so I know the weirdest things from time to time.
So then you would love that cemetery. It is graves date back to the 1600s. It's located in it's very secluded. It's on a hillside almost, and you have to kind of climb a hill to get there. It's surrounded by trees. It's sort of a wooded area. And when you're in there, you just kind of go, wow, you're in a whole different world. Uh-huh. Fascinating. The whole Bartram family is there, and it's a Quaker cemetery, the religion was a little bit different. It was a Christian religion, but they, at the time, believed it was a little different than other religions in that every person had God in them. Very interesting philosophy, and they believed that they were more of a community of friends. So I find it fascinating. It is a place that I really need to return to. But I just couldn't believe that EVP. It really struck me. I also did, and then this was a little bit different for me because I tend to focus on the light, but a story came up, and I really could not resist it. It was H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer. Not sure if you probably heard of him. I didn't know this, but I found out, actually, by reading the news, that he was buried in an unmarked grave in a cemetery that's in Yadin, Pennsylvania, in Delaware County, 15 minutes from my house. And I'm like, no, that can't be true. And there was a big debate, was it his body in the grave? And I understand that there's probably a movie in the works and TV shows and documentaries. I think one documentary's already been on. And it was really his grandson that had this whole movement going to exhume his body and test it for DNA. To find out, was it really him in that grave, or was that legend that was told after his execution true, that he really escaped, and it wasn't him? And, you know, I thought, geez, this is on the dark side, no doubt. Am I even going to find the grave? And I did find it, and I do believe that I did get some communication with him. He did say, I felt that it was him in there. I believed it was him. His body actually was not there at the time that I was doing most of the investigating. It was at the University of Penn being tested. So, the results came back finally, and it was him in the grave. And I, you know, I continued to ask, and I wasn't getting any answers on the EVP. And then I said to him, I generally said, how much did you pay? How much money did they take to allow you to escape? And he said, unfortunately, none. That was the answer that I received. Huh. And from that, I said, okay, he's kind of, after about five visits, saying, it is me. And it was him. So I that was just wow. That's about the darkest that I've gone. Of course, he was probably half man, half monster. So I don't think that you could go much darker than that. And it was one of those things I would never have pursued. But it's like this is basically around the corner. It's knocking at my door. I just felt compelled. I was like, I can't not go try to investigate here.
And, well, I would have probably done the same thing. That's got to be very fascinating to find something out like that. You got to at least look at it once.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and it was just a really strange thing. There was this legend that he had escaped. He had bribed people. They let him go. And there was a public hanging, and it really wasn't public. It was a closed hanging in front of 100 people in an area in the jail where they did the executions. And the story was that he replaced his body. His body was replaced with a corpse, and they let him go. So the man that they actually saw hanging there was not him. I didn't believe it. I personally did not believe it. I thought, well, he probably would have wanted something like that to happen, but chances are it didn't. And it did turn out to be him. And, yeah, just a fascinating, fascinating story, though. And one, interestingly enough, that stood the test of time, which was another reason why, like, and I like stories like that, that kind of stand the test of time. People continue to talk about them. For, you know, this was 100 years ago, and people were still talking about it. And there are so many fascinating details to, you know, that whole story and how he was buried under concrete and an unmarked grave in a Catholic cemetery. It's just wild, wild.
Well, that sounds like an incredible experience on your own, especially because it. When you're thinking about it at first, you know, I would have just dove right into it. I don't get scared that easy, to be frankly honest with you. I don't go seeking out bad things, but when you run across something like that, there's a sense of wanting to do it, and then with some people, they would be terrified of it.
Well, I will tell you that I did give it some serious consideration. It was I don't really go to the dark side very much. I think there's a lot of light to focus on, and that's where I like to go. The story was so intriguing, and I said, I feel okay about doing it. I mean, I was nervous, but I wouldn't say frightened. My concern was, you know, I mean, I did believe that there was a likelihood that maybe I would have made contact with him. He might have responded to me. And of course there, you know, I got 100 other EVPs of other things. I even had one warning me about him, saying that man is sick. I have it on my YouTube. And I got all kinds of EVPs, like sounds like rusted doors opening, things rattling. I mean, it was just weird EVPs, you know, sound, scary, frightening, I guess you could call them. And that didn't put me off, you know. I kept going back. And finally, he did speak, and I do believe it was him. I just approached it like, you know, I would be a professional. I will remain as respectful as I would anywhere else. Ask questions that, you know, were poignant, and hope that, you know, I did get some answer. There was an unusual energy there. I mean, I'm not going to say that I didn't think there was. It was a strange, strange situation. I'm glad I did it. Nothing horrible happened to me. I really was not frightened by anything. Having said that, it was something I did alone. I wouldn't have asked anyone to go with me, particularly a female, and that's usually women are in Philly ghost hunt, so there's no male. And so I would never have asked any female to go there. Nothing happened, you know, that horribly frightening to me, or anything that I found that would have put me off. But I wouldn't put somebody else in that circumstance, just because really, probably, you're not going to find too many other people who would be, say, more horrible than him. And, you know, I think I got an answer, which was incredible. But I'm not completely finished, because the one place that I want to go to is actually the site of the execution. He was executed at what they call Philadelphia County Prison or Moymensing Prison. And it was torn down. I think it was closed maybe in the 50s or early 60s. And the building was actually torn down in the late 60s. And today, there is an Acme supermarket there. And the execution room is where they, horribly enough, it's where the butcher is, which is, I guess, apropos, I don't know. But behind the building, there is one brick wall, apparently, a half a wall. And that was part of where, you know, the, I guess, where they would hang someone, where that whole scaffolding was built. And that's all that remains. So my last place that I want to go is there. I'd just like to go, see if I can get an EVP, maybe use the dowsing rods, see if I get anything. It may have absolutely nothing to do with him. Maybe there's just something residual there. But I think it'd be interesting, nonetheless.
With it being a prison, you may very well get residual activity. There's a very famous prison in Columbus, Ohio, that was claimed to be haunted for years. Of course, they tore it down. They built around the block, and there's still a large open area there. I had the privilege about 3.5 or 4 years ago, give or take. Well, a little bit longer than that now. I can't even remember the time, to be honest with you. But I had the privilege to going there after they took the physical prison down. Now, they moved some of the bricks out to the Mansfield Reformatory and a few other areas. But a lot of buildings and courthouses and all kinds of other things have sprung up around it. However, you can still go there and get that activity from that prison.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was a unique experience for me because I wasn't expecting to get anything. Of course, there's still rumors from the other buildings that they hear things from time to time, but several of the investigators that went with us at that period in time did receive some very unique EVPs and some experiences that would indicate that though the building's not there anymore, something still lingers.
Okay, very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of theory involved in it, and you may agree with this, you may not agree with it, but, you know, a lot of the theory involved especially is about energy. Now, that would be a good reason why when a building is gone, it still remains, because it's not about the building. It's about what was in the building, what happened during that process, and what still remains afterwards. Logically, that could be why you see a lot of schools that have hauntings, a lot of hospitals that have hauntings, even when they're partially tore down or abandoned for years and so forth, because so many things of an emotional standpoint happen there. Well, they're bound to stay.
Yeah. So I think it's a fascinating topic, and I agree with it. Very much so. Sometimes it's just residual. I found, however, that sometimes a spirit is very much in the moment and will communicate, which is always interesting.
It's unusual, I guess you could say. It's fascinating, but you are correct. You can run into a situation where it takes days, weeks, months, sometimes years to get that one reaction, and then go to another location and something just be chattering your butt off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I am very fortunate, and I guess this is why I do it, at least pursue it to the degree that I do, is that I do actually get a lot of really great communication. I've never not had the dowsing rods work. And I think I've only come out twice without EVPs. So that's like, what? I don't really do houses. It's just not my thing. Residential hauntings are not, it kind of gets into a whole other area that I just don't, it's not that I wouldn't do it. I don't really seek it out. A lot of it's residual, but you know, I tend to get spirits who will communicate with me. And what I have, again, from that bottom-up processing determined is that spirits are around. They're all around us. You may talk to someone just passing through, someone in the area. And, if you happen to be one of those people that spirits wish to speak to, they'll speak to you. And I personally, you know, if you go into someone's house, it was my house haunted, I saw the dowsing rods work. Well, that was just like the spirit that's kind of passing through or hanging out here, but I wouldn't call it a haunting. Yeah, it's not, you know, because I do get a lot of that communication. And I do get EVPs. That absolutely does not mean that something is haunted or isn't haunted. It means that at the time, this is what was occurring there.
If you think about it, when we're alive, though we stick, for instance, I stay at my house quite a lot, but I also travel around and I don't limit myself to my home. Why would that be different when you pass? Especially if you've got the chance to go wherever you want, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't you use that and not necessarily be in the same location all the time? That's the one thing I think is fascinating about a lot of hauntings. I've been to buildings that there's no, you know, you go into a building and you find out you're there because a little girl died there, or there's a story about a man that hung himself there or something like that. And you end up with something that's theoretically should not be there. It makes no sense. You go into a house where a man hung himself and you're talking to a 7-year-old child.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It really is. And it's also interesting. Sometimes no matter how I generally, when I go into it up front, I don't do a lot of research. I just do enough to know that I'm interested in this. And I like to go and just see what the activity is. And then I review everything, and then I really start the research. So I don't always go in up front knowing everything. I don't want to know. And yeah, absolutely. You say, you know, what I just got was nothing like what I anticipated. Or you get something that was so, like, you totally didn't think it was even going to happen. And, you know, I had somebody singing to me once, you know, like a nice song. I put the EVP on YouTube. This didn't even fit for this. And you kind of go, wow, no matter how much I prepare or what I think I'm going to encounter, sometimes that's just not at all what happens.
A lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you made the point. It has to do with, if I could travel anywhere I wanted, why wouldn't I? You know, why wouldn't I do that? So I've seen people get really scared, like, oh, it'll follow me. Something will follow me. I don't want to go. Things are all around you all the time. I wouldn't say that, you know, to frighten someone even more. But this is life, and this is the afterlife. And I am thrilled that I get to speak to some people who enjoy talking to me, which is really cool.
Well, I know people worry about attachments quite a lot, and they can happen. But, again, it kind of narrows down to, as you mentioned earlier, people just passing by. You know, whether I'm alive or dead, if I notice somebody, let's say my niece I haven't met in years, and I happen to be in a crowded area and see somebody that looks like my niece, well, I might follow that person for a slight period in time to see if it's my niece.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I'm going to interact or be violent or cause issues or exactly. So forth. It just means that for some reason, for a brief period in time, you seemed recognizable to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It's like people, spirits, for the most part, I think most of the ones that we will encounter have been people. And they will behave as they did when they were people to a large degree. And that's not harmful in 99.9% of cases. It just isn't. And if you don't happen to communicate with spirits, you'd probably never know. So, I think, a lot of this is just so fear-based. And, I hope that we kind of relax about it and just learn from it. I think that's really where the value is.
Media overblows the fear thing a lot, but I will say, from the time that I grew up to now, it has become a lot more acceptable to discuss, talk about. It seems people are more open about it. When I was growing up, you couldn't go to your neighbor and talk about a ghost because they'd look at you funny and think you were nuts.
Yeah.
Or they were hush-mouthed about it. You don't talk about those things. They could be demons.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But nowadays... you can go around the corner and somebody will talk about it.
I guess the whole media and the popularity of the paranormal is sort of a double-edged sword. I mean, the great thing is that people are talking about it. But maybe the flip side of it is they might not be talking about the right things and or have the right beliefs or maybe rooted more in fear and the thrill of it. Instead of, the exploration and learning.
Yeah, a lot of people get the wrong impression, and I always say this, don't get me wrong, I love the paranormal TV stars. Some of them I've met, they're great people, they work very hard at their job, and they only have 45 minutes to put something together. Plus, you got the networks that want to push that for entertainment, so they got to push the scarier side of things, or the... startles and so forth, but reality is that's not what 99% of the actual field is about.
Oh gosh, yeah, and I mean I enjoy the shows as well. I do, and some people don't feel that way. I enjoy them. I think they're great. And I think if it gets people interested in something, then it's wonderful. Approach it though with an open mind and be ready to learn. And explore and understand that really, the author's purpose there is for entertainment, and it's a lot pushed into a short period of time. Actually going out and doing it, it does unfold very differently, very differently. I always suggest people give it a try if they're interested. Why not?
Well, it's how most of us get started. We have a curiosity. We go out there. We apply it on our own. Let's face it. I've said this 1,000 times. Listeners know this. You don't really have a manual.
No. Absolutely not. And
you're kind of winging it.
Yeah, I know people. I know people who have 30 members in their group, and they have very expensive equipment, and they do a lot of videoing and things like that, and that's nice. It's very expensive, and some I don't know what they get necessarily on those videos, but okay. You don't need all that expensive equipment. I mean, video. How many people really are going to video an apparition? It's not very likely. Can happen, but it's not all that likely. Pictures are great. Again, that's one piece of evidence. I say if you really have an interest in it, give it a try, and just do it with the basics. You don't need expensive equipment.
Well, I had mentioned early on in one of my shows with a gentleman, Paul, that had been doing it for 23 years in Nashville, Tennessee. Reality is, when you're taking video, and don't get me wrong, I'm doing a documentary myself, and I can assure you it's very expensive. I've already spent $2,000 or $3,000 on video equipment to follow along and tell the stories of other people. But the reality and actual paranormal study of getting a video of an apparition, getting a photograph of an apparition, and so forth, it's slim to none.
Yeah.
And we don't really know why. A lot of times you can set up all of this stuff and it's going to be right behind the camera instead of right in front of it.
Right.
You can take thousands of pictures and the moment you stop snapping the pictures, something appear right in front of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And perhaps it's because they don't want the photograph.
I am a strong believer in that. I believe that when a spirit, being an energy, leaves an EVP or communicates over the spirit box, it's because they want to. If you get a picture, if you are lucky enough to get a picture or video, they wanted that. And if you don't get it, that's they didn't want it. And that's really what I think it comes down to. You could try. but, yeah, I agree. Really, the reason to spend all that money on camera equipment and really expensive technology is because you would be needing to document something. And truthfully, unless you're a filmmaker, that probably isn't too necessary. Now, granted, it's all the rage on YouTube. Some of it's really good. Some of it, you know, you question the quality. Personally, myself, I don't go in that direction. I think it's wonderful, those who do and do it well, that's great. I personally don't. But generally speaking, it's really more for documentation and filmmaking.
Yeah, entertainment. Entertainment is a lot of what you see on YouTube as well as on television. Now, scientifically speaking, yeah, you can set up the equipment and in a place in a situation like that, most of the time, most of the universities I know that have done it, they're not doing it for the purpose of entertainment. So they understand that odds are we're setting up all of this stuff that we got investors for or we got, you know, grants for, and we're probably going to get very little. But that's the idea of it. You know, document every single thing, collect the data, see what you can match, what you can't match, what you can explain, what you can't explain, then move on to the next project.
So personally, I keep it pretty simple. Dowsing rods, EVPs, spirit box. You know, I take pictures and some short videos. And I really get some good evidence. So I personally suggest people do it if they want to give it a try. There's nothing really to be afraid of, provided that, of course, you have the right intention and you're going into it really in a respectful way, kind of in an unassuming way. At the manner that you would in a social situation, if you would be rude and crude and whatever, well, then that might be what you attract. That is always my advice.
You know, I express that with young teams a lot, actually. When I do my EVP sessions, and people look at me funny sometimes when I'm out there and I do my EVP sessions, I don't really ask the basic questions that most people do. You know, are you out here? Did somebody pass here? Blah, 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 blah. I talk to them like they're human beings.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just see what you can get.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think one key point is, are you someone that a person wants to speak to? Can you say, hey, you were a person, let's talk, you know? That's key. Do spirits want to talk to you? Well, you know, kind of depends on maybe what you're saying to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also think, you know, if for example, you, you're going to a very specific place and you're like where I was going to the Bartram family. Well, if you go in and you don't know anything about the Bartrams and you don't know anything about John Bartram and you don't know anything about the history, would they speak to you? No. But if you go in and you're prepared, well, you might get an answer.
Yeah, it depends on each situation. And, I mean, you might even get a response there if you ask the right questions while you're talking to somebody, just like you would in life. I mean, if you're hearing somebody that's talking to you in another room and you think it's funny, you might laugh. But you're not nearly going to get the interaction in some areas as you are in other areas. But speaking to them like they're human beings, I know if I was dead or alive, I prefer somebody talk to me like an individual.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you mentioned the laughing. I once, you know, made a mistake, said the wrong date, and I was really confused about what I was saying. And you heard this giggle, EVP. I when I played it back, I said, oh, my gosh, she laughed at me. And I just stopped in my tracks like, that was kind of funny. I was tired. I was all discombobulated, and I'm like trying to orient myself, saying it was kind of the end of the day type thing, and it had been a busy week. And I'm saying, "Oh, I'm here at the," and I got it all wrong. And you actually hear a giggle, and it's like I corrected myself and I move on, because at the time I'm, you know, doing that, I don't monitor in to the DVR. I can do that to listen with like a headphone or an earbud or just one or something. I don't, though, because for me, I can't work that way. I can't focus. So, and there's benefits and drawbacks. It would be beneficial to know at the moment if something was coming in, but it would also be distracting. And I can't seem to focus my energy that way. I need to either not listen, or that's what I'm going to do is listen. So I don't play it back. I let it just record. I usually will have two or three. One is always on me. Two others might be placed in other areas. And, you know, of course, it just involves time, listening, making clips of EVPs and so on. But to kind of be walking along and get that giggle and, you know, play it back afterwards was, I'm like, wow, just so in the moment. And it would have been really great to have had to known that at the time, you know, because that could have been a great conversation starter. So I guess that's the downside of not knowing in the moment what's going on. But having said that, you know, I kind of save it till the end and then replay it and say, oh, what happened? But it also directs my second trip. So that's important, too.
Well, a lot of times you do get little things like that. I remember I was up one time at an investigation at 5 a.m. in the morning, had no sleep. We're here at 8, 9 o'clock at night at that point, and I had just noticed the fact that I buttoned my shirt wrong. Now, we didn't get anything, and the first thing I do is look and go, well, you could tell I didn't wake up on the right side of the bed. I didn't button my shirt right. And we didn't hear anything at the time, but then I play it back when I get home 2 days later, and you can hear somebody laughing their butt off in the background that wasn't even in the room. I was the only person in the room at the time.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, so. Yeah. So that's so great when that happens, because you go, wow, you know, it's so important to bring that out and highlight it. We do move on, but spirits, you still can, quite apparently, maintain a lot of your personality. Be very much in the moment. And if something strikes you funny, you might laugh at it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about, I know we're at about 4 to 5 minutes till the end of the program, and it's been a wonderful conversation. You're always welcome to come back. But let's talk about where the listeners can find you so that they can look at some of your EVP and your YouTube and so forth, and talk a little bit about what you're planning on doing here in the future.
Ah, okay. Well, you can certainly find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Instagram is Philly Ghost Hunt. Twitter, I'm Donna at Philly Ghost Hunt. And YouTube, Philly Ghost Hunt. And if you go to my webpage, which is BillyGhostHunt.net. you know, there are links to all my social media. And also on Twitter, all my links to social media. I pretty much primarily use Twitter. And then kind of go to the other platforms because people use them. I mean, mostly, though, I seem to like Twitter. However, I use all of them for all users. And I am planning a pretty cool investigation for Washington Square. I definitely need to return to Lafayette Hills in the near future. Big point of interest. And I have a few things planned. Mount Moriah Cemetery, it's a very large cemetery. It's well-known in the area. It's mostly fallen into ruin recently, although there is a project to kind of, you don't want to say revitalize a cemetery, but restore it. It had a lot of incredible structures that have really deteriorated with age. And there's a very interesting story about the Gale sisters. They were ballerinas from London who perished in a fire during a show. It was Shakespeare's The Tempest. Horrible, horrible tragedy. And there is a monument erected for them at Mount Moriah. So anyway, I'd like to go there and see if I can kind of hone in on that story a little bit. And there are a few others that I'd like to investigate. I have some good plans. I really like to pursue the urban myth, the interesting stories, things with a lot of historical value. Love to get into Edgar Allan Poe's tale.
We are roughly about out of time here. I apologize for cutting you off, but I want to make sure that we get the other guest, the other host in here in the next several seconds. You listeners, you've been listening to Donna from Philly Ghost Hunters. This is BBS Radio, your host, Christopher Houston, with Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm going to end you with the same statement I do every week. As you're listening and following us every single week, you're noticing something that's it can be a regular pattern from time to time in the paranormal. A lot of times it's not nearly as scary or as unusual as you think. So remember that truth should always remain the reality around you. We're going to let everybody off of here. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday. Got a wonderful guest coming in. His name is Alan. He's an author. We'll talk to you soon.